some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We're in for a... We need to have like a 7-hour show today, but we're in for a fantastic hour today because we are fortunate, blessed, and lucky to have Mr. Craig Campobasso on the line with us in just a couple of moments. He is an Emmy-nominated casting director. He's a film writer and director and producer, and he is also the author of a trilogy of science fiction books that he's going to tell us all about. His third one is coming out right this hot minute, and it's called Tehran's Dossier, and we're going to hear all about that in just a couple of moments. But like we always do, I'm going to take you on the road trip of where we've been this week so far, where we're going, so you can tune in and be part of the show whenever you would like. Because, of course, you know, who's going to be up listening at 8 a.m. besides, you know, half the world? The other half sleeping, so you can get the show whenever you want. Yesterday, we had Dr. Annie Ulrich on with her August energy update, and she takes listener calls having to do with, you know, pretty much anything. She's a psychic, intuitive. She does tarot readings, dream interpretation, the whole ball of wax. If you call in to one of our fun guest shows, that's what I call guests like Dr. Annie, or our guest tomorrow, Carrie Ann Hartley, we'll talk about in just a moment. I always encourage you to go back and listen to the replay, especially if you are a caller, because when you're calling in, you're usually nervous or so wrapped up in trying to hear, but not listen, hear what the guest is saying. You know, Dr. Annie's giving you her pearls of wisdom that oftentimes, you know, you might hear three or four words, but you miss the whole sentence. And so if you have the opportunity to go back and listen to this, especially as a caller to the guest, I think that you will take some notes and probably get much more out of the reading than if you just take it at surface value. So that's my little armchair psychology for the day. So if you go back and listen to Dr. Annie, I think you'll like it. Tomorrow, for the first time, and hopefully for the first of many times, we're welcoming New Jersey, but it's Northeastern United States psychic extraordinaire. She's popular everywhere she goes. She has a new reality series that's in the works. It's Carrie Ann Hartley. She's going to be taking your calls tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I want you to make sure to call in and listen. And as a secret, I'm telling you all my secrets today. You need to call in 15 minutes before the show starts. So starting at 7:45 Pacific Standard Time, you can call into the show because that's when the hotline opens up and you can get your calls in the call queue. And that's important because the second that the show goes live, I get about 100 calls for our guests who are coming on as psychics, and because everybody wants to, you know, ask their question. And you'll know if you listen to any of the other shows, we sometimes have repeat or regular callers, or, you know, and we love them. They're awesome people. But if you're a first-time caller or have never talked to Carrie Ann before, now's your chance. You get in before the getting is good, and you get to make sure that your question is answered. So call in tomorrow starting at 7:45. Thursday, we have a very special, this is like the NBC going tonight on a very special Blossom. But on Thursday, we do have a very special Rated LGBT Radio. My guest is Rob Watson, of course. And I say guest because he's normally my co-host, but this week he's actually going to be flying down, and we're assuming that the plane works. He's flying down Thursday afternoon with his two boys to attend a conference, and he's landing in the Orange County Airport right over here by my place. And so Rob's going to bring the boys over. We're going to go out for some Thai food or something like that, go walk on the boardwalk a little bit, and then come back and do the show. So Rob's going to be, I say, in-studio guest. If you saw my studio setup, you'd laugh because it's really set up for a studio for one. So I'm making Rob go in the other room. So if Rob, you know, if we're in the same room and he's talking, it would sound very echoey, and it's a disaster waiting to happen. I've tried it before, so trust me on this. So Rob's going to be here doing the show live with me. I'm very excited. This is our first chance to actually meet. You'll remember last month I actually flew to San Francisco for a job interview. Perfect plan set up. He was going to come up from Santa Cruz, pick me up, show me around San Francisco, and get a bite to eat. And then my plane was like 5 hours late. So that never happened, and we never had a chance to meet. So hopefully everything will go well on Thursday, and I can't wait to have Rob here. But Friday, this is going to be fun because I've met this young man once, but I'm playing his music all the time because I can't stop it. He's got a song out now called Life's a Bitch, but he uses the F word a lot in it. And it just fits the mood right at this point. But his name is Lonnie Paul. I won't be talking about this on Friday with him, but he's actually married to Carol Burnett's daughter, or one of them. So Lonnie's going to be coming on. He's this very talented singer, songwriter, guitarist, musician, animator. He does some cartoons that are on YouTube. He does songs for music and movies and so much more. And so Lonnie's going to be my guest in hour two of the Friday Night Dance Party this Friday. The show's going to start at 6, but Lonnie's going to come on at 7 o'clock in the VIP guest hour of hour number two. So today, now, I could just read you the information that's on the show page, but I refuse to insult you like that, listeners, because I know you can read. So I'm just going to say welcome to the show for the first time as our featured guest, Mr. Craig Campobasso. Craig, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. I love your whole week's lineup there. That sounds really fun.
It's like an all-star lineup, and we start with an Emmy-nominated casting director right here. This is fantastic. I mean, how often
Who's that?
Yeah,
that's
you.
Me?
Yeah, that's you. So I don't even know. Obviously, I want to talk about your books today, but I don't even know where to start with you, Craig, because you have so many things that you're amazing at and are known for. But do you want to start with the books, or do you want to
start with absolutely. It's a trilogy, and all the books are called The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga. And book one, book two, and book three are all subtitled. So book one is I Am Tehran. Book two is Waking Tehran. And book three, which is releasing this week, is called Tehran's Dossier. And these books have been in the works probably for about 30 years. And it took me about a year to finish the last book that's just coming out. All the books are fully illustrated. I go through painstaking joy, as a matter of fact, working with an incredible artist named Christine Dennett, who has helped me bring all of these books to life. So each book has about 70 or more artist renderings of the extraterrestrials, the master teachers, spaceships, landscapes on other worlds. My favorite is Pyramid City at Melchizedek, which is a whole city just made up of pyramids, and that's a whole interesting story in itself. But it's just so fun to bring it all to life and to do something that's a little bit different, which I call spiritual science fiction.
So how do you come up with the term spiritual science fiction then?
Because the books are all spiritual. So I look at it as we've all wondered what universal society would be like out there. And so this book brings you into the realm of a fully conscious universal society, how they would think, how they would interact, being spiritual beings, but also in book one, right from the start, we do set it up that Tehran is a college professor at the advanced university level at Melchizedek, and part of his job is to train messengers and mighty messengers for incarnation missions into younger worlds to help raise consciousness. And the world that's in focus is Earth. So it's about all of these beings from all over the universe training to come in, fully conscious beings, to then incarnate into a dualistic world, being born dualistic, and then raising themselves up spiritually to become fully conscious, which helps raise the consciousness. So it's such a fascinating, interesting concept. And I just had such a great time writing it.
So how did this idea, because, you know, you said this has been percolating for the last 30 years, and it's taken a little bit of time to write each of the books. And I'm going to tell you, for everybody that's out there, I'm going to back up here. For everybody who's out there watching or listening to the show right here on Blog Talk, there are three links on the show page today. The one I'm going to talk about first is Toronto. That's going to take you to Craig's website where you can actually buy the books. We'll talk about the other two website links in detail later. The first is listing for Craig's website, which we'll talk about his actor's workout in a little bit. And again, Stranger at the Pentagon, his short film that has been winning awards and being shown all over the place. But if you go to Taran's dossier on the show page, you can actually buy all of the books. So if the books have taken you 30 years, where did that idea come from, Craig, to say, you know what, out of all the things that I'm going to do, I'm going to sit down and write a spiritual science fiction book today?
Well, it all started when I turned 26. I had a major, major spiritual awakening. I was asleep, and then I was catapulted into becoming very awake. And I went through a bunch of processes. One was where all the cells of my body were woken up, and it was like all of a sudden seeing everything from the way that your connection to all that there is and seeing the beauty behind the creation of everything, from people to every little thing. To sit back and say, where did all of our food come from? Who created that? Where did it? You know, it just got to me about all of this different things of creation. And I just sat down and I started writing about all of my experiences. And I wrote a 400-page book that basically just detailed my spiritual journey. And when I finished that book, I sat down to write The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga. Now, I wrote book one and book two. It was a 900-page book at the time, and I wrote it over 25 years in between casting jobs, because that's what I do for a living. I cast film and TV, so I would work, and then I would take chunks of time off, and I would write, and I would receive all of this incredible information like a download. For me, writing the book was like reading a book. I just felt not to censor anything. I didn't know sometimes when I was writing something, I said, well, that doesn't make sense. But I kept going and going and going. And then, of course, later on, it would make sense to me about how that was. Even in book three, me knowing what happened in book one and book two, there was an inkling in me of where I thought things were going to go, but when I sat down to write it, a lot of things just shifted and went into all other directions that totally made sense to me, of course, once the book was complete. So it's just connecting into source and allowing that source to guide you in a sense where people can glean all of these great spiritual lessons that are being taught throughout the book as well, or throughout the books. And anyway, it's been a journey that I wouldn't give up for anything, especially the spiritual awakening part. And I myself, before writing book three, actually had a second spiritual awakening, which was even more intense than the first one. And it's, again, connecting on levels to the inner planes of what unconditional love actually is. Right?
Oh,
for myself.
Okay. I have a question for you. I asked you this question before. So, having all this information, you become like this kind of this world. Did source any of their inspiration to share with you from watching Dynasty or Dallas?
Gara, everything you said was all computerized. I couldn't even understand it.
Goodness.
Can you hear me?
I think it's we're getting this energy interference today. A lot of great things on a lot of interviews. You know that.
I know. It's like cutting in and out. I'm not sure.
Huh. I don't know. So
okay, I heard I don't know.
And you're even calling from your landline, which is great.
I am, just so that there's no cell phone. But now I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, so let's question again. It's like, so when you are being this information as a download from the source, does the source take a creative writing class watching Dynasty and Dallas season finales before presenting this to you? Is because your writing is very it's fast-paced, it's action-paced, full of love, intrigue, betrayal, with book one and two, and I can't even wait to read book three, but with book one and two, you get to the last page and then you scream out, no, because you can't believe we have to wait for the next book.
A big part of that is in bringing forth this kind of information, I think that having cliffhangers and pushing action forward helps the reader to get through and digest the information. Before, when the book was 900 pages, I didn't have a terminology of the extraterrestrial worlds in the back of the book. So a lot of things were overly explained and all of that. And then I got to the point where I said, I have to take all of that out and put it in the back of the book so that we could just sort of stick the story. But throughout the creative part of the story, that action does push it through so that it really makes you want to see what happens next.
And honestly, a lot of science fiction books you read don't like that, and they should, because when I'm reading the series here, every single, and the chapters are easy to read. One other thing that I really appreciate your writing style is you don't give me an 80-page chapter. You're giving me a chapter that I can keep my attention on, finish. And then, but by the time I finish, I want to get to the next chapter. It's very rare that I sit down and actually read the book in one sitting. And with both of your books, I did that pretty much. There might have been a couple of small breaks in between, but I will tell you, I sat down and just read from beginning to end and was screaming at the end saying, this can't be the end of the book, because you were so invested in these characters and everything that's going on. Where did the characters come from you got the download, but talk about some of the characters and some of the relationships and the things that actually happen in the series.
Well, Taran is the lead character, and that was the first character, of course, that came to me. And learning about his journey and his life, he's somebody who was born into universal society, into a fully conscious society, but he's one of the anomalies, as they describe in the book. One in every 200,000 people up there is born dualistic, and that is so that these dualistic beings will learn from a fully conscious civilization to attain becoming fully conscious, which is merging their light and dark so that their heart rules their mind. But it also helps keep the fully conscious beings in check because they're not privy to what it is to be actually dualistic, right? So he's chosen to actually be the head college professor at the University of Melchizedek, who is teaching the messengers and mighty messengers about duality and about being fully conscious before they then partake in going on these incarnation missions. So he was the first one, and his whole life and everything is sort of what came to me. And I just found that in itself to be extremely fascinating. But we, the reader, take Tyrone's journey of being dualistic to learn how he works towards his rising out of duality, and then taking ownership in all the things that he does. So the books really delve into what duality is. I will tell you, before I even started doing these books, I didn't even know the word duality. I didn't even know what duality was, and I didn't even understand, you know, duality on a deep, intense level to understand this struggle that we all go through. I mean, I understood the struggle, and I understood everything that I was going through, but I didn't understand the true meaning of what thought was. And the beings from Marama are from the great I Am, and they teach the lessons of the power behind thought. So we think a thought, we have the power to create or destroy that thought. And if we create that thought, we're responsible for its creation, whether we're doing this with malevolence or benevolence. And to me, just that simple little thing about, you know, one of their great sayings is the truth of the triangle is the power of the pyramid. So the triangle is thought, 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 and then thought manifested. So we're responsible for our creation of thoughts. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people here are driven by their emotions, and when they're being driven angrily or if they're pissed off at something, they don't actually sit back and examine themselves outside themselves, looking at themselves objectively. They just react. And in that reaction, they're just causing friction back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So if you actually step back and took a look at yourself and say, why am I actually feeling angry? Oh, it's because I was hurt, but it really wasn't my fault, right? So
yeah.
So is there a lot of those kind of truths are throughout the book. In the book, as you know, there is this amazing technology that is called the Imager. And the Imager is also a tool for these advanced beings in spiritual learning. So what they can do is they can project an image of themselves outside themselves and look at themselves. And their soul will talk to them through this image about what they need to work on spiritually if they're not conscious of it.
And
so it brings it to the forefront. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Isn't it interesting, though? And I think this is one of the – I wanted you to talk about some of the characters specifically in just a second. But I think one of the things that I was – in when they are doing that they take that information and they're very objective about it. There's no anger, there's no you know, joy, no pain, no whatever. It's like they just look at themselves going, oh, okay, I need to be working on that. And then they just go and say, well, you know, sorry, I have to go work on this, I'll see you later, goodbye. And then they go off and work on it. And
right.
You know, the other
right.
person might have, you know, hurt or whatever, but again, that's their own thing. And then they work through their stuff. And it was, I thought that was, at least to me, maybe, you know, it just spoke to me because of the point in my life that I'm at, but I was shocked to see just how easily they just said, okay, well, I need to go work on it. So I, that's my thing. I have to go work on it. And there was never any fight about it. It was just done.
No, there's no struggle because they're fully conscious beings. They're working from the base of unconditional love. So in this love, all day long, and remember, they're telepathic. They're all connected inwardly. They can talk in a voice. They could talk to each other telepathically. They can transfer their feelings. So if you and I were talking and I said, Garrett, at this one time in my life, I was going through such emotional trauma because this happened to me. in their world, if they were to say that, they could say, would you like to feel what I felt? And they could transfer that feeling body to you, so you would have the full sensory experience, and in having that full sensory experience, you would love them even more for the depth of what they went through.
How powerful
I mean,
is that?
That's incredible. I mean, so when everything is done at an unconditional level, like, for instance, if somebody is feeling down, everyone around them can sense it and feel it, and they go and they tend to that person. It doesn't matter if they're doing their duties, if they're doing what they do in their daily life. Everyone stops. The person is more important than the duty. And that, to me, is, I mean, it just, when you connect into that incredibly energetic vibe, it's something that I really wish this world had. And it's something that we can all create here if we know how to do it. And I really hope that these books give people the tools of how to get there and how to do it and how to practice it in their daily lives.
So you've told us a little bit about Taran and where he started from as a university professor and, you know, what he goes through. But can you maybe four or five of the other characters that are also included in this book? You know, I'm not kidding you, folks. Like, you know, intrigue, mystery, you know, betrayal, all of these things you expect to see in a big soap opera. At least that was one of the reasons I enjoyed this. But it's not overdone, and it's not, ugh. When the Colbys on Dynasty Colby show had the space alien. It's not like that. You know, this is like during the peak seasons when the shows were really good. That's what these books are. But who are some of the other characters that the readers are going to find out about and fall in love with like I have?
Well, Taran's best friends growing up who were also dualistic are another commander named Pandosola. His best friend also is Soltar. And there's another lead character whose name is Kyalina. All of these people are all interconnected, and you will take their journey from beginning to end, from book one all the way to book three. Book two, the relationships between Pandosola, Taran, Soltar, and Kyalina are so... I couldn't even imagine what happens to them anywhere in any book that I've ever read. It was an amazing journey for them, and the twists and the turns and everything that happened there as well. We also get to meet a lot of the universal hierarchy. We get to meet Archangel Michael. We get into the Lucifer Rebellion, which is the greater. So we deal with the regular duality in the universe, right? And then we deal with the greater duality of the universe between Michael and Lucifer. And we learn about a lot of that in book one. And then book three is where Lucifer and his cohorts are on trial for soul death. They've been in prison for the past 200,000 years on a prison planet, and now it's time that they've been given that amount of time to redeem themselves. And anyway, they are now. So book three deals with a lot of going back to the original hearings of the Lucifer Rebellion, how all of that transpired, how they were imprisoned, and then flash forwarding to today and the trial for soul death. And I have to tell you, it was a book that I really wanted to write because I really wanted to know what happened in that storyline. And what happens in that storyline, I couldn't even have dreamed of, because, again, there's more twists and turns and all kinds of things there that blew me away. I mean, blew me away. So you get to learn about Lucifer's life, actually. Was he married? Did he have children? Who are, he's a created being. What are created beings? What are paradise sons? What are all of these different things that are going on in the universal hierarchy? So we get that, but then we in book three, we also get to learn about Turan's journey through this. Turan is commissioned by Archangel Michael to write a dossier on the Lucifer Rebellion. And so he has to present this dossier at the rebellion at the actual trials, the tribunal, and present it to the Ancients of Days, which are Paradise Sons, who Paradise Sons are God the Father incarnate, and the Ancients of Days are ancient Paradise Sons from previous universal programs that run the multiverses. So we're a local universe, right, which is gigantic.
We're localhood.
But then
right.
there's 700,000 local universes within one super universe ovum, and there are seven super universes. So you get to learn about all of that that goes on throughout all three books as well. So you get this great universal history lesson. And I'm really glad that you got that. The one thing that I had to do was write it simplistic, because there's so much of this information and things that aren't known on Earth, you know, even their spiritual technologies, how everything is done, like Turan's spaceship, for instance, is all made of organic material. The skin of the ship actually holds the cells in his body, and he's the one that can only drive it or thought jump it across the universe, because his brain and his soul are the ones that drive the ship through the DNA interaction between him and the craft.
How profound is that?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And a lot of their technologies are based on these organics, and it's quite fascinating. And you know, there's giant motherships, there's worlds. It just goes in, and it goes into the explanation of how they stay young looking. They all look like they're a perfect 30 years old. They will never age. They live very long lifespans. Created beings never die. They're eternal, but the regular beings that are born of man and woman, some of them throughout all the worlds across the universe live 1,000 to 3,000 years or more, depending on the planetary sphere's realm of, okay, I'm coming in to learn this. So we're all coming in here to Earth to learn duality, right, and to learn love. So this sphere is saying you could do that within 100 years, but you might have to keep coming back. And that's your choice. You can learn on this side or the other side, but if you come here, you advance a lot faster.
Oh.
So you see, because this world is where you struggle and you build faith. So when you're caught in predicaments of, for instance, being homeless or not being able to find a job and not having money, it's your faith and through your own action that helps to guide you, and that's a great spiritual builder as well.
And so, I think a lot of people are accelerating very fast here.
Yes, exactly. Like right now, if you go back to the time in the 70s all the way up to now and really look how fast, spiritually advanced everybody's become, I know all of my friends throughout all of the years have advanced by leaps and bounds. And I think a lot of the world's consciousness will as well. And I being in the film business, I know that doing films and books and things like this are really great teachers for the mass population, for them to see and say, oh, I never thought of it that way. Maybe if I started acting that way, things will change, and people start changing their behaviors, and they start to advance spiritually, and they see their lives positively change for the better.
Well, I will tell you, I am so looking forward to Tehran's dossier when that comes out. I'll be first in line, and I absolutely need it. You can have many people say, I want the first copy. I want the first copy. It might be copy number 7,000. I don't care. But tell me it's the first copy, and I'll be happy. And I want to.
You're going to get the first copy, Garrett.
There we go. Thank you so much. So can I ask you about the artwork? Because this was so important at the very beginning stages of this book for you to include and to have this carried out and, I don't want to say modified, but improved just even with technology with your artist over the last three books, because you started writing the first book on, I think it's November 11th, 2011. And then here we are in 2016 with book three. Where have your characters come from artistically that you present in the book from day one to today?
Well, I see them vividly. I see them, they come to me in what I call lucid dreams. It's where I wake up in the dream and I'm actually, my spirit is somewhere else and I'm interacting with them. And that soul exchange of like what we talked about before, they will share their soul with me and I'll get to feel who they are. And it's like a transference of consciousness. So then I write from who they are through that transference, and I see them vividly. Like, for instance, I saw the artist Christine Dennett on a I saw Barbara Lamb on a talk show, and she was showing the artwork of Christine Dennett, and I called Barbara and I said, could I meet this woman? And she said, here's her number. I met Christy all these years ago back at Follow Your Heart restaurant, which is a delicious vegetarian restaurant. And we sat down and she said, I just have to sit here for a minute and sort of acclimate my energy to you. And then all of a sudden she looked at me and she looked way above my head. And she said, oh, there's this very tall man who's over 7 feet tall with long blonde hair, and he's telling me his name is Theron. And I said, his name's Tehran, and he's the lead character in the book. I said, you got the job if you want it, because I figured if she was that hooked in immediately.
Wow.
And the thing is that she's so hooked in that she too experiences these beings. So I sit with her and tell her what they look like. She draws out these beautiful sketches, all of which I have, which I like to display sometimes somewhere. And they're these beautiful pencil sketches. And then she puts those sketches in the computer. I give her all the colors and everything that goes in it. And she does it, and we just modify it until it's perfect. And then we just do this character by character by character. So we were able to, even with a lot of the old artwork, is revamp them through, because the computer technology has grown so much that everyone's skin tone and hair and everything looks real. It's almost like looking at a photograph.
Well, they are absolutely stunning. And if you are on my Facebook page right now, you'll actually see a link to go buy the books. But when you click that, somewhere on my page, I shared one of your posts, Craig, and it has the cover of book three on it. And the artwork on there is just breathtaking.
Yeah.
The characters just have so much depth and character. It's like you already know them before you start reading the book.
Right. And the thing is because of this experience, those photos carry their energy signature. So the one thing that I get constant letters from people all the time, even from book one. They email me and they say, I feel very connected to these beings, like I know them. There's something about them that I know, and I can't put my finger on it. But I knew from the beginning that I had to bring that part of it to life, so for people to make the connection like I was making the connection.
Can I ask, this thought came to me just like right now, because when I take a look at your characters, you cross over, you know, various races and ethnicities and skin colors and hair colors and things like that.
Yeah.
How come? Okay. So, wow. I've known you for a hot minute and I have never asked this. Why don't the quote unquote aliens like Taran and so forth have like this cone heads and the weird eyes? How come they look normal?
Well, most of the universe is human appearing as well. There are a lot of different extraterrestrial species that are enlightened, that look different. The Maramayams, for instance, they're not on the book cover, but they're so extremely advanced. They have these very long, long elongated heads with large almond-shaped eyes. And they wear these Maramayam robes, which, interestingly enough, what's in these robes are infinitesimal sun cells. And each one of those sun cells is a sun from across the vast creation. And these robes are computers that they can compute and go to any sun system throughout the entire body of creation and see what's going on if they had to, it's so fascinating, that whole thing, and a lot of that is explained in book one as well. There's another character named Jonathan, strangely enough, and he's, I think, he's in book one or book two. He's interesting looking. He's got like dog ears. His skin is like soft brown chocolate leather. He has big bee looking eyes that are aqua. He has a nose and a slit for a mouth and very insect like body. And he's an amazing looking creature as well. And then there's some others in there too that are tiny little beings as well. I'm just trying to go back in my head as some of them. But the vast creation, the thing is that the story revolves around these beings, and
right.
So that's what they look like.
That's what
it's
they look
same
like.
Same thing, you know. And by the way, so if a being there looks white or black or brown or Indian, Eastern Indian, American Indian, some of them have blue skin, green skin, silver skin. There's a new character, by the way, in book three, and her skin is multi-hued, every color. It's a wash of every color created, and her hair is also long, and it's every color created. And in their world, in her world, that there, I think it's one in every one or 2,000, there are these rainbow beings, but then the rainbow beings, when they mate, they create colored children. So one child might be blue, one child might be green, one child might be white, but then there's all, but so it's a world of nothing but color, right? It's so fascinating. Her name's Alteria, and it's really, really fascinating. There's another being called Zayden, who is a sun man. He's like from a sun world. And I'm trying to think of some of the other interesting ones. Oh, there's an incredible being that's a bioluminescent being as well. And It's just the expanse of life. I mean, we know what life forms and things are here. They're discovering new life all the time. Imagine the entire body of creation. It would blow your mind because you can't even comprehend what's out there. And so, you know, that's what this is. So when we see somebody in, like, my books that might look Asian or whatever, doesn't mean they're Korean, doesn't mean they're Chinese. It means they're from somewhere in the universe that the beings look like that, but we would equate it to them either being Chinese or Korean or Japanese, right?
That's just how we are.
Yeah. So the thing is, for instance, there's there's some black characters as well, but they're not African-American, they're not African, they come from other worlds. And you have to remember, up there, all these worlds are united. They're in the galactarian alignment of space peoples and planets, and they all interact and they all fall in love, and they all make gorgeous, different colored babies like everybody does here as well.
There we go. So, okay, yeah. I want to talk more about the book, but we're running out of time. We've only got 15 minutes left, and we've got two more topics to hit. So you just got back from the Seacoast Comic Con on July 23rd. You were out in the northeast part of the United States, and you had lobster rolls, and you met tons of fun people. Talk about your Seacoast Comic Con.
Yeah, it was Comic Con back in Maine, and I went there to do some screenings of Stranger at the Pentagon, the short film, and to great success. It was really, really fun. And lots of people drove from all over the East Coast to get to Maine to come and see the film and all of that. I did another panel of My Life in Sci-Fi because I've worked on so many science fiction movies. And people love that as well. And that was great, great fun. And as you know, Ancient Aliens just did a wonderful story on Stranger at the Pentagon, which I was a part of. The episode is called The Mysterious Nine, N-I-N-E. So if anybody hasn't seen it, you can go to YouTube, just type in Ancient Aliens, The Mysterious Nine. The Valiant Thor, Stranger at the Pentagon, Dr. Frank Strange's story comes in. Oh, about, I think, maybe on the YouTube it might be 27 minutes, but in the real show it came in with the commercials around 40, 45 minutes, somewhere like that. So,
and that episode,
so still,
was like, episode was like the top 10 of their all-time episodes, too.
That's the George Nuri show I did called Beyond Belief, which is on Gaia TV. It was on Stranger at the Pentagon, and they told me that on the network, and they have many shows on their network, and George is, I think, in his fifth or sixth season. I did two shows with George. The second one hasn't aired yet. We did Positive Extraterrestrial Movies for the second episode. But the first episode has been airing for a couple of months, and they called and told me that it's in the top 10 episodes of all shows on the network.
Wow.
So there's this great interest for Stranger at the Pentagon. If anybody wants to see it, they can just go to strangeratthepentagon.com. You can get the book, the movie, all of Dr. Frank's stuff, the posters. Everything is there on the website. By the way, all the books, Dr. Frank's books, everything is out of print. The posters, I have the original book posters. I think I have 15 left. We have Victor 1, Valiant Thor's spaceship, holds up to 200 people. We have the blueprints, what it looks like in a poster, the starship, which is 14 miles long and 7 miles wide. And I'm still out there raising the money to make the big feature-length film of Stranger at the Pentagon.
I've made the assumption poorly that everybody out there has seen Stranger at the Pentagon here, Craig. Tell us, kind of in a nutshell, what Stranger in the Pentagon is about and why this is going to make a great science fiction feature film when you have the money raised.
Well, it's from a book that was originally written in 1967, and I read the book in the 80s. I met the author in 2001, I believe. We became friends, and through a whole course of circumstances, I ended up becoming involved in making the movie. And anyway, it's about Valiant Thor, who is a created being as well, who came here in 1957, met with President Eisenhower, came with a divine design to help eliminate sickness, disease, poverty, and to prolong life. Eisenhower felt great goodwill towards him and put him on VIP status, where he lived and worked with Eisenhower and Nixon the rest of the Pentagon staff into creating this plan into America, and when proven successful throughout the rest of the world. In the end, the plan was turned down because they thought not the president or Nixon, but all the rest of the powers that be said it would put doctors, nurses, hospitals, pharmaceutical companies out of business. Well, yes, it would, because then everyone would be completely healthy and able to function and do everything on their own without assistance from any governmental facility as well, right? So it's a great, fascinating story on ancient aliens. The story was also, I always tell people, I love the story. I can't prove it. I'm just glad that I get to be the storyteller. But I can tell you that Harley Bird, who was a part of Project Blue Book back then when Valiant Thor was at the Pentagon, confirms the story and also wrote the foreword to Stranger at the Pentagon as well. And I have the brand new copies of the book, by the way, on the website if anybody wants to get them, strangeratthepentagon.com. And anyway, Harley Bird on George Nourry's show, Beyond Belief, I released all the paperwork that proved that Harley worked for the Department of Defense, how Admiral Bird, Richard E. Bird, his uncle, wrote a letter to a rear admiral in getting his nephew a job at the Pentagon, and hence he was there and was there working for the Department of Defense and had a honorable discharge. And when he passed away, he was sent an honorable certificate from President Obama as well. So, but also in the episode, Laura Eisenhower, Eisenhower's great-great-granddaughter, confirms the story, as well as Paul Hellyer, who is the former Department of Defense in Canada. So George Nourry was on that episode. There was many, many people on that episode as well. So it's a fascinating story, and it's one of peace and goodwill, and that's why I like to tell it.
And, you know, it's just interesting because, you know, we see so many parallels today with, you know, ways to improve health and, you know, be healthy and naturopathic. And if it doesn't go along with big pharma or, you know, the big lobby, you know, boy, it just doesn't get a lot of voice unless we have people like you that
right.
go out there and, you know, tell stories of, you know, hope and inspiration. So thank you for doing that. And if you want to donate to Stranger at the Pentagon, of course, write Craig a nice big fat check for, you know, $50 million and he would be eternally grateful. But you can go to any of the sites that you have.
I would.
Yeah, that would be great. But you can buy. Here's also what I like. If you want to get Craig's books, sure, they're on Amazon, but save yourself that. Go to the link for Taran's dossier that's on the show page. And if you buy the book directly from Craig, we all know what time of day it is here, folks. This is about independent artists, whether you're a musician, author, whatever, filmmaker, whatever the case is. When you buy it directly from the artist, they get the money. When you buy it through another source, they take their 30 to 60%, and then, you know, the artist gets a penny at the end of the day, many months later. But if you buy the book directly from Craig, number one, he'll be eternally grateful. Two, he'll personally autograph it to you. And then three, he'll mail it like same day. So it's not like you have to wait months to get, you know, get any of these things, but you get the satisfaction. You're knowing you're getting autograph copy that you'll want to save for collector's purposes, but then you're also helping the artist directly. So please go do that. And if you have other science fiction fans during your life, do yourself the favor. Like I tell everybody on the show, when you listen, you know that what's coming up. You're going to buy 10 copies. You buy one for yourself, and you know 9 other people at least that are going to have birthdays, anniversaries, or other celebrations throughout the course of the year, and you want to be liked. So buy them one of Craig's books, or buy them all the books. And buy Stranger of the Pentagon on DVD and give them out as gifts, and you will be loved eternally for that. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left, and Craig, you've got an actor's workout. It's not even a workshop. It's turbocharged.
It's turbocharged, yes.
What is going on?
So I'm going to do an actor's workout. We start on Saturday, August 30th. August 20th, sorry. And it's from 12 to 3. It's in Burbank. And I've been casting movies and TV and teaching acting for well over 30 years. And so this is me giving all of my experience and expertise, of course, working with actors in the casting office every day and giving them direction and showing them the things of how they can get there from A to Z in a very short period of time. I also have a kids and teens class that starts on the same day. That's from 9 to 11:30 as well. So people can go to craigcampobasso.com to check it out and email me through the website if they'd like to join up.
Well, and that sounds so easy, Craig, but if I were to go to your workshop here starting on August 20th, what would I expect as a newbie who's never done this, who's terrified out of his mind to go up and try to do anything like this? What should my experience be like from the time that I walk into the door to the time that I leave that first session?
Well, from the time you walk in the door, you're going to get a whole bunch of information. So I always have everybody bring a notepad and to write everything down. And then when we start working on the scenes, you and a scene partner will come up and work. I will see what you've done. I will give suggestions and things, and also about office etiquette, by the way, because you could be a brilliant actor and not have office etiquette when coming into a casting office and not book parts. So it's a whole, you know, a lot of people can act, but they come into the office and they either are too nervous or too shy or too this or too that. It's all a, you know, it all comes with a perfect package. So we'll learn all about that. But what I do is I do everything through confidence building. And through confidence building, everybody gets there really, really quick. And I love to watch people grow in such a short, short period of time that they're going to be able to say, I got it. I've got all the tools I need now to go and do an audition. So it's going to be the tools of getting, what do you do when you get when you first get a script? How do you assign each line of dialogue an action or a verb on how to say it and what to do? How do I know the tone of what show I'm going to read for? What's the tone of this movie? Is there a script available for me to read? What's my emotional state if I'm reading 3 different scenes in my audition from the beginning, the middle, and the end? How do I arc that in an audition, et cetera, et cetera? And I think the basic is really the one thing that I do is I show everybody how to get the emotion running through their feeling body, because once the emotion's running through their feeling body, they're no longer acting. They're just being present in the scene.
And so everybody who's in Southern California, well, you could fly in too, you know, but that's your
own
private.
Yeah, I have people that fly in every week.
Yeah.
I do.
So go and sign up at craigcampobasso.com. There's all the information there for his actor's workout starting on Saturday, August 20th. It's 4 Saturdays, 4 consecutive Saturdays. So you'll be able to go in, have 4 weeks of great coaching, and then come out of it feeling much more competent as you go out and audition for all those big parts for movies and TVs and commercials and things like that. Craig, it's been a pleasure having you on today. I am so grateful to know you and call you my friend and to know somebody who is as talented as you are. Taran's Dossier comes out this week. Go and the link is on the show page. Just click it and go buy it now. You will thank me later. Trust me. And you also need the first two books so you can get caught up. So, you know, Craig, you might have to go and get another million books pressed this week. I don't know. Everybody,
I have them.
You have them. Craig has them. So you don't
have
to worry. He'll get them to you now. Tomorrow we're going to have Carrie Ann Hartley, noted psychic, on the show. She's got a new reality show that's coming up. We can't wait to talk to her about that. She will take your calls. The phone lines open at 7:45 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. You need to follow the show. You can also catch the repeats on Apple's iTunes as a podcast. It's my pleasure to do this with and for you every single day. And we will see you live tomorrow on Rated G Radio.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.